your shoes, please. Take off your belt, please. Turn over your liquids, please. Prepare for your enhanced pat-down. Yes, this is the Mike Malloy Show. Welcome, America. Welcome, truth seekers, to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman in once again for Mike Malloy. Broadcasting tonight and all week long, with the exception of Thursday, when we'll be bringing in a tryptophan special from Mike Malloy. Broadcasting all week long from the Left Coast, beautiful K-Talk AM 1150 studios in downtown, beautiful downtown Burbank. Not so beautiful tonight. Cold, cold and windy out here on the West Coast. So for a change, if it makes you feel any better, we know what the rest of you are feeling out there across these fruited plains. And, well, hell, if I think it's bad, imagine how the folks out there in Seattle feel. What was it, like 16 degrees or something? And hell, if you people in Seattle feel bad, imagine how the folks, our friends up in Alaska, feel. Epic storm up there. Stay warm, America. I am Brad Friedman, in for Malloy, here to keep you warm all night and all weekend long. So cuddle on up to the radio. Not too close, though, because I kind of got a cold. Yeah. But I'm here anyway because, you know, us guest hosts, we don't get guest hosts. So it's me, no matter how I feel. Glad you could join us tonight. Big show ahead for you. Our numbers are, if you want to call in, our numbers are 877-520-1150. That is different than the usual Mike Malloy number. Don't bother them. Well, they wouldn't be bothered. They're not going to answer anyway. They're out having fun this Thanksgiving. And Lord knows they deserve it. 877-520-1150 will be our number when you do want to call. We would love to hear from you. You can also stop by the chat room. We've got an open chat room tonight all night long at bradblog.com. Stop on over there to the top of the blog and click on the comments thing, and you'll see it. You'll figure it out. You people are smart, right? There's a chat room there. Desi Doyen will be moderating the chat room for you as best she can, while she also answers your phone and runs around and makes me hot tea and stuff like that. Yes, I've got my water, got my Gatorade, got my nasal spray. There's my nasal spray. Got my Kleenex. Tony's got a call coming in for some reason. He'll get to that. We've got a big show ahead of for you, as I said. We've got the Secretary of State of Ohio is going to be joining us in just a few minutes. Jennifer Brunner, the outgoing Secretary of State of Ohio. She's going to be, I'll tell you what, a week or two ago, we had an election, I hear, in this country. And what do you know? What happened in Ohio? Touchscreens started flipping again, still. And Jennifer Brunner has done actually quite a bit to improve the system in Ohio. Unfortunately, there's only so much she can do. And, well, if you didn't pay attention, Republicans have now taken over as governor in Ohio and Secretary of State in Ohio. Jennifer Brunner did not run for re-election. And so, looks like 212 is going to come barreling upon us soon enough. And the question I have for the Secretary of State of Ohio is, will we be looking at another 2004? Another 2004 Ohio presidential election when we get to 2012? Yeah, plenty to be worried about. What, me worry? You can also Twitter us tonight at The Brad Blog. I'll be doing my best to keep an eye on the Twitters at The Brad Blog, and as well as on the chat room. And later on in the show, we're going to be joined by Timothy Carr from freepress.net to talk about net neutrality, where that stands right now. But frankly, and to be honest, more importantly to me, where does the fight to restore fairness to the people's airwaves, to the public airwaves, where does that fit into anybody's agenda? When we look around this country, when we see everything falling apart, and I spoke about this a week or so ago when I was covering for Mike. Hell, I speak about it every time I'm covering for Mike. When we look around at all of the problems we are seeing in these United States, where do they all come from? Failure of the mainstream media. Why? Because we've got phonies, liars, paid shills, corporate spokespersons out there 24/7 on our people's airwaves, our airwaves, who are lying to the people, who are passing on disinformation, BS. You know, it's one thing if you don't agree with anyone's policies. You don't agree with Barack Obama's policies, that's fine. Lord knows I don't agree with many of them. But, you know, the ones that I don't agree with, it's because I legitimately understand them and I am opposed to them. I am not opposed to his imaginary policies. I'm opposed to his real policies. Most of America is opposed to his imaginary policies because we have liars, shills, prostitutes, pawns, pimps, and phonies on our airwaves 24/7, and something needs to be done about that. So we're going to be talking to Timothy Carr about net neutrality, making sure that that stays available for the people. But what the hell can we do to get the public's airwaves back for the people? That's the bottom line, folks. That's the bottom line. That is everything. Well, anyway, says me. And we'll see what Timothy Carr has to say about it and where the hell the Democrats are on it. Yeah, there's a lot of other stuff. You know, last year, around this time of year, I was actually broadcasting from Dallas last year, covering for Mike, when the Christmas Day bomber... Oh, man. When that nonsense happened, and I didn't even want to talk about it because it was so stupid. You remember, Tony, right? I was infuriated that I even had to talk about it. You had all these right-wingers, all these wingnuts running around. Oh, my God, there's a man, he's got explosives in his underwear. What are we going to do? It was like, people, it's the land of the free, the home of the brave. Man up, America! But they didn't, so I had to talk about it. And here we are a year later, and what are we doing now? We're pulling down your pants, we're feeling you up, we're sending you through the porno scanners. What the hell are we doing here, people? What the hell are we doing? So I suspect they're going to be talking about that, too, today. But I'll tell you what. You know what? If it wasn't for the fact that there's a Democrat in office, we wouldn't be talking about this at all. Folks on the left, the progressives, we'd be out there yelling and screaming how invasive this is. Folks on the right would be saying, oh, well, you guys are just... It's a post-9/11 world. Don't you understand? This is necessary. We have to take away your freedoms. Well, now we got a Democrat in office, so all the right-wingers, they're more than free to, complain about whatever it is because it's Barack Obama's fault, naturally. All right, we're going to take a break, and we're going to come back with the Secretary of State of Ohio. One of my favorite tweets today from Rep. Jack Kimball, the Republican congressman from the 54th Congressional District in California. They only got 53. But anyway, he says, just saw a foreign policy tweet from Christine O'Donnell. It's like seeing a Dexys Midnight Runners reunion concert. Hope you old people out there get that joke. I know I do. Brad in for Malloy. Much more straight ahead, including the Secretary of State of Ohio. Mike Malloy Show, Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative citizen blogger, troublemaker, muckraker, from bradblog.com in for Mike Malloy. We are joined right now by the Democratic Secretary of State of Ohio, Jennifer Brunner, joins us. She was, she of course took office in 2006 after 16 years of Republican control. In 2008, it should be noted, she earned a Profiles in Courage Award for her reform of Ohio's voting system. Madam Secretary, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show.
Hi, Brad. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you here. Glad to have you in Ohio for, what, two more months?
That's about right.
Oh, brother. Okay. Well, and I said before we went to a break that Ohio has now been taken over by Republicans. Jennifer Brunner did not run for Secretary of State this year, so we've got a Republican governor coming into office, a Republican Secretary of State coming into office. This concerns me for reasons I'll discuss in a bit, but Madam Secretary, if you could first, let me give you the softballs first before I make your life tough.
That's kind of you.
It's at least that. You know me.
Yes.
And by the way, I think last I saw you was the Democratic Convention in, where were we?
September of 08.
That's right. In Denver. I think I got you drunk as a skunk on margaritas. Was that?
I don't think so.
That was not?
I don't drink on duty. I drink a lot of iced tea.
I see. My mistake. Okay. So the softball questions first. Since you came into office in 2006, what can you tell us to reassure us about Ohio's voting system, the changes that you have made that will, frankly, hold up in the years ahead after you leave office?
Well, I'll start with some of the structural things, which really have to do more with permanence and as much as you can be permanent in the election world. The League of Women Voters had filed a lawsuit against Ken Blackwell, my predecessor, really looking to remedy about 30 years of election transgressions in Ohio. So we were facing $4 to $5 million in attorney's fees to try to settle it, but we were able to settle it because we implemented, in collaboration with the League of Women Voters, a lot of great practices that assure better training, that assure more transparency and accountability for the election processes, not just at the state level, but at the county levels. So we agreed to a six-year consent decree, which was in 2009, with the League of Women Voters, so that even when I leave office, the new Secretary of State is going to have to do things like continue to provide flip charts or these very simple and easy-to-use training manuals for all the poll workers. The Boards of Elections have to engage in pre-election planning, which has to be available for review by the public. The use of backup paper ballots in particularly larger turnout elections. There's a whole host of things that we institutionalized, which is the better way to do it. An election system shouldn't depend upon one person being at the top, but it should depend upon a system that's been devised and strengthened with laws and rules, and in this case, a consent decree that not even the legislature could overturn. Now, at the same time, we've also instituted rules, a new rule that's that we had its first hearing today and we don't think should have any problems sailing through. It deals with how late the precinct locations can be changed. So we're moving that to 45 days before the election. So we don't have, so first of all, our online information is accurate for voters who look to see where they vote, because they can look online under the Help America Vote Act to find that if they're registered to vote, where it is they vote, they can get a Google map from their home to the polling location.
And the reason you don't want to change the polling place just before the election, because this was something that has been done in the past as a way, last-minute polling change, and so all of a sudden people don't know where to show up, and it just happens to be in heavily Democratic districts. Is that what we're talking about?
And then the problem you've got is that, and we even experienced a little bit of this in 2010, in Delaware County, there were some polling locations that had changed recently, so people were still going to the old locations. Well, if they went to the old location at 7:25 and the polls closed at 7:30, they wouldn't have time to get to the new location. What we did to compensate for that was we ordered the Board of Elections to have extra poll workers at the old location and let people vote at the old location on paper ballots.
And will those new rules stay in effect for the next several years, or will that, in fact, be up to the new Secretary of State?
The kinds of things that we're talking about, like the backup paper ballots, those are in effect as long as the consent decree is in effect. And you know, some of the boards of elections, they have a hard time getting their head around the idea that this is like a spare tire for a car. It's like an insurance policy. You hope you don't have to use it. So we pay for those paper ballots with our HAVA dollar periodic payments,
right?
And even then, you still hear them, you know, complain about we have to throw all these ballots away. But yet, when something happens, in the primary election, when we first used backup paper ballots, we had flooding, we had power outages, we had ice storms, we had bomb threats, and you know, in this case, there were counties that had they not had the backup paper ballots, people would have been turned away. And when that happens, you have disenfranchisement occurring because you can't guarantee that every person will be able to come back.
It sure does. And this is one of the I got to get to a break here. We'll have a much bigger segment after the break here. Speaking with Secretary of State of Ohio, Jennifer Bruner, unfortunately, the outgoing Secretary of State. When you talk about the backup paper ballots, does that mean that everyone in Ohio may vote on paper ballots if they want to, at least as long as this consent decree is in effect? And how long is it in effect?
It's in effect for 6 years, so I believe it will be until the end of 2014 at the earliest. So, the reasons they can vote a paper ballot is if the machine breaks down or there's a power outage or if the lines are too long or if they just prefer and feel more secure voting a paper ballot.
All right, we're going to take a break. More with the Ohio Secretary of State, Jennifer Bruner. Did you hear that, America? Ohio gets to vote on paper. Everybody in Ohio gets to vote on paper in 2012. Much more straight ahead. Brad in for Mike Malloy.
What is wrong? And the evidence is clear. I'm not alone. There are thousands of us here. This is my democracy. You won't go telling me my vote don't matter anymore. And it's not worth this is our democracy. We'll fight to keep it free. You won't go telling me.
All right, welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. That's Victoria Parks with My Vote Don't Matter Anymore, a song that she wrote. She's an Ohio voter. She wrote that after the 2004 election, when she overheard a man who tried to cast a vote in Ohio in 2004, had a hell of a time doing so, and he basically said, my vote don't matter anymore. And Victoria Parks wrote that, what I believe to be a classic song. We are joined by the Ohio Secretary of State, Jennifer Bruner, a Democrat who will be replaced in just a couple of months, sadly enough, by Jennifer, what's her name? Dave Yost is his name, right?
Oh, no, it's actually Republican John Husted.
Oh, John Husted. Okay. My mistake. I got to get this.
Yeah, John.
Okay.
Right.
What do we know about John Husted, by the way?
Well, I can tell you about the transition that we've had so far.
Yeah.
And I was very prepared for that. So I called Senator Husted. He's actually former Speaker of the Ohio House. House and then ran for the Ohio Senate after term limits and has been an Ohio senator in the Ohio legislature. So I called him the day after the election and suggested that we get together as soon as possible to talk about transitions. So a week after the election, he came in and we were able to give him really a very nice menu of things that he had to choose from. So
mm-hmm.
The transition document was the most important thing, which was what they need to do in the first 90 days, what they have to do over the course of a year, even the numbers of full-time employees at each board of elections in the 88 counties in Ohio. He was given budget information, employee information, table of organization, revenue projections, since we do collect fees for the state. And then I told them you can have two full-time employees of your choosing on staff to actually execute the transition,
mm-hmm.
and offered to send him to an orientation in Texas before the end of the year. So I know from what I've heard outside that they're thrilled with the cooperation that they received in the transition, and it's much different from what I experienced with former Secretary Blackwell. But my philosophy is that the office doesn't belong to me, it doesn't belong to him, it belongs to the people, and it doesn't matter whether we're separate parties. We owe it to the people of the state to ensure a smooth transition, and I owe it to my employees as well.
Well, you do, and I do remember speaking to you way back when in 2006 about the mess that you faced coming in following your predecessor, J. Kenneth Blackwell, which now brings me to the difficult questions. You deserve great credit for your study of electronic voting systems out there in Ohio, the huge study, Everest, which turned up so much valuable information about these voting systems. And I know that after that study, you recommended that all of the counties in Ohio, all 88 counties, get rid of their touchscreen voting machines. And anybody who knows anything about these unverifiable voting systems knows that, you know, they are antithetical to democracy. Nonetheless, last week or 2 weeks ago, we ran some video at bradblog.com of a voter in Stark County who caught, with his iPhone video camera, who caught his votes flipping from a Democrat to, I think it was to a Libertarian candidate, on the Diebold touchscreens that they are still using in some, what, two-thirds of the counties out there, at least?
It's more than what we would like. Yes, it's about 47. It's a little over half. Oh no, wait a minute. I'm sorry. So the Diebold, I think, is about 46 or 47 counties, and then we have about another 10 or 11 counties using the ESNS touchscreen, and the rest are using paper ballots.
Right, and frankly, they're all, pardon my French here, they're all crap. I mean, they cannot be relied on. They can't be verified. Yeah, I'm sorry.
The problem with the Diebold, and we've tried to tell the Boards of Elections this, is that when they're calibrated, they have to be calibrated with a stylus and not with your finger. And we learned that when we did a test in Dayton a couple years ago when we saw that there was this vote flipping. And as much as we talk, it's like being a parent. You know, you wonder sometimes when it's going to sink in.
Well, even if they are, you know, I mean, I'm not always that worried particularly about the vote flipping. What bothers me more about that is that then you have these guys coming in and recalibrating them in the middle of an election, which I think is insane.
They really can't recalibrate them because the LNA testing has to be done, logic and accuracy mm-hmm. testing has to be done. So we had the same thing going on in Fairfield County, and we literally had them take the machines out of service that day, and they were able to use backup paper ballots. So the problem is that the screens for the Diebold machines, which are now Premier Election Solutions, but
Dominion to be keep up.
And now Dominion's taken that over, although ESNS can sell everything
right.
but a whole system and service it.
Right.
Made it interesting for an interesting combination of relationships.
Yeah.
But the problem is that Tyco says, according to its industry standards, you know, who makes the screen, that there's a certain percentage that they're permitted to be safely off in terms of calibration.
Right.
And I don't really think that flies for voting.
Well, but the problem is, even if they work, even if they're accurate, we have no way, the public has absolutely no way of knowing that even one vote was ever cast accurately as per the voter's intent on a touchscreen voting system, and that's including with the so-called voter verifiable paper audit trail. We just can't know. It is, as I like to call it, 100% faith-based voting. Now, I know, Madam Secretary, that you have got different rules than we do out here in California, where the Secretary of State was able to just decertify and just tell these counties, that's it, you're done, you're not using these machines anymore. But is there nothing more that you can do? As you can tell, I'm quite worried about 2012, Ohio. Is there nothing more that can be done on your end before you leave office that might somehow encourage, order, these counties to, you know, return to verifiable voting across the Buckeye State?
Well, we will be doing post-election audits this year, and that's something that has to continue to be done for the larger elections. And the process, I'm in the process of finalizing that directive now for the boards of elections, but the process is that they have to compare the VPATs with the electronic returns for random precincts that would comprise initially, I believe, 7%.
The VPAT, just so people know, that's the verifiable paper audit trail. So that needs to be compared in a post-election audit. Random
the electronic results for those precincts. Then if the votes are off by any more than two, then they've got to add in more. And if they can't get it to work, they end up having to hand count the entire county. That should give people some assurances. I know that a lot of people do not check the voter verified paper audit trail, the VPAT, mm-hmm. as they're voting. They're focused on the screen and what's going to come next. And so in the end, for instance, with the Premier VPAT, they can see a summary of their ballot. But with ESNS, every keystroke is registered on the VPAT. So even if you undo a vote and change it to something else, that still appears on the VPAT, which means that you've got a lot of paper moving through there pretty quickly that's hard to keep up on and hard to check every single thing against your vote unless you make the conscious effort to do it.
Right. And let me also add, if I could, Secretary, that a bunch of studies, one recently, I believe, from Doug Jones, University of Iowa, also found that of those people who actually do check their summaries at the end of voting, two-thirds of them don't notice when their vote has flipped, even when they do bother to check it. This is a serious problem. I can't believe anybody in America is still using these systems after all that we have come to learn about them.
Well, the problem that we ran into in Ohio was funding. And I pushed as hard as I could push. I pushed the Democratic governor. I pushed both houses of the legislature. We have set up a revolving loan fund that we were hoping to fund with capital funds this year, but the state legislature never passed a capital bill. So that's been the major problem, because in Ohio there could really, we tried also to pass an election reform bill, came close, but the legislature, when it's now flipped to all Republican, has decided not to hold, for all intents and purposes, a lame duck session. So that's because the state and the federal governments issue the requirements, but the counties have to do the funding. Now, the first round of funding after the Help America Vote Act was federal dollars coming through the states to pay for the new voting equipment. But what people seem to forget in this post-punch card era is that this electronic voting equipment, whether it's optical scanners, but especially the touchscreen machines, aren't made to last as long as the punch card systems and counters did. So, I mean, just imagine putting your computer in the middle of a shopping mall and having people, say you've got some kind of a touchscreen computer, you've got an iPad now, people come by and they mark on these things, they do different things, and they cast their votes on it. Well, how long do you think that's going to last?
Right.
And that's been a huge problem. I've seen these machines, the legs fall off of them. Mahoning County, which is Youngstown, Ohio, bought the electronic machines before the VPAT requirement was actually put in the law in 2003. So their machines had to be converted with add-ons for the VPAT. So they're working with smaller screens.
You're not making me feel any better about 2012, Jennifer.
Well, I can tell you this. As I've toured the 88 county boards of elections, we've got people in boards of elections in Ohio who are only working, the counties are only funding them to work part-time. You may have two part-time workers who staff those boards of elections, but yet they'll come in and they'll put in the extra hours beyond 40 hours, up to 60 hours, and they do it because they know that they owe it to the public. They, what I see with a lot of local election officials, especially the ones who are now mastering the new systems, is that the election, doing election work, they understand exactly what it is that they're doing in terms of carrying out democracy, and it kind of gets in their blood, and they work very, very hard. Sometimes what happens when there's a clash between the Secretary of State and the election officials is that the election officials are the ones in the trenches. So they're looking at these huge masses and volumes of paper and work that they have to do. So sometimes they tend to put the efficiencies ahead of, well, how's the voter going to feel if they're confronted with this type of procedure or situation? And so it takes a Secretary of State with the bird's eye view to say, no, we're going to take it from the viewpoint of the voters. And I'm sorry if this means that you have to do more work, but we want the voters to understand exactly how this process works and feel confident about what it is we're doing and that their vote really counts.
And I would argue that it's hard to have that confidence, no matter how good the poll workers are, with the voting systems you're using. Secretary of State Jennifer Brunner, are you able to hang on for one more second? I know it's for one more segment. I know it's late out there.
Yeah.
You don't mind? Thank you. I really appreciate it. A couple of quick questions I want to ask in the remaining time that we do have. Ohio Secretary of State Jennifer Brunner for one more segment. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. Going to ask her about hand counting paper ballots and what she's doing next right after this.
Took that stroll to cast my ballot at the local poll. The lines were long, but I didn't care. I had water, a hat, and my folding chair. Walked up to the booth, didn't say a word. Sure that my voice would be heard. I hit that button, my vote was sent. But now nobody knows exactly where it went.
All right, welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy, speaking with Ohio Secretary of State Jennifer Brunner, who is the outgoing Democratic Secretary of State. She'll be, I guess, done by the end of this year, replaced by the new Republican Secretary of State, John Husted, who comes in with a Republican governor. Just in time for the 2012 elections. Madam Secretary, we've got just a couple of quick minutes here, so I will be quick about it. But over in the chat room at bradblog.com, Big Lib jumps in to say, Brad, I live in Ohio's 16th Congressional District. Please tell Ms. Brunner I said thank you for all she's done. Wanted to make sure to get that to you, Madam Secretary, since I'm always so tough on you.
No, that's very sweet. And you tell her, I'm happy to do it. It's my job.
There you go. Okay, real quickly, since we only have a few more minutes here, it sounds like there is nothing that can be done between now and the time you leave office to ban these infernal touchscreen systems. But when last you and I talked a couple of years ago about this, we had talked about a pilot program for hand-counting paper ballots. You had said at the time you would be interested in something like that. I take it we haven't been able to do anything like that. Is there any chance for that in the future, something that you might be able to encourage even after you leave office?
The chances probably aren't great. We have a directive that tells boards of elections how to hand count ballots. And where, for instance, we are using that is in the situation of a double bubble. Double bubble is on a paper ballot, and we are using more and more paper ballots in Ohio because of no-fault absentee voting. So in 08, it was 30% voting before the election. Most of that was paper ballots. The vast majority was. So if a double bubble situation is when someone fills in the oval for the candidate whose name is printed on the ballot, mm-hmm. and it so happens, if, for instance, we see it more often with the ballot rotation where that name appears just above a write-in space, and they fill in the bubble for the write-in space and write in the same candidate's name they voted for. In the past, that would have been spit out by the counter as an overvote and not counted. I have, to the chagrin of the boards of elections, I have made them go back and find all of those double bubbles, determine voter intent as the law requires, and to count the votes, those votes that are like that, which means they have to hand tally those votes and then add them in manually into the tabulation system.
Is that a procedure that will have to stay in place when you're...
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
Okay, so
and believe me, the boards don't like it.
Well, I'm sorry, boards, but I think counting everyone's vote is a good idea, and it's a refreshing thing in Ohio, and in no small part we have you to thank for that, for the procedures, the changes that you have made during your tenure. So what is next for you after you leave office, Jennifer Brunner?
At this point, my plans are to go back into private practice, so there may be some election law work there that I'll be doing, as well as doing some consulting, teaching, and writing. I ran a law firm for 13 years, or almost, 13 years, and was the administrative partner before I was elected judge. And for a while, I had to resign as judge to run for Secretary of State, so I went back to the law firm. So I kind of look forward to being a free agent again and getting out of the crosshairs for a while.
And maybe we can bring some lawsuits, and maybe we can help put J. Kenneth Blackwell, your predecessor, in jail where he belongs? Is that something we can do?
I think he's actually working for some think tanks and doing some consulting and so forth. At this point, we still have custody of the 2004 ballots. They're still the subject of litigation.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted to actually have those stored at the state library, but the litigation is not yet terminated. So the next Secretary of State will get to actually do something with those ballots when the time comes.
And that case continues, and I know that Karl Rove was actually subpoenaed just a few days before the 2010 election in that case, with the approval of your office and the AG's office, as I recall.
Right. I the attorney asked me if I would have any problems lifting the stay in the litigation for the purposes of the deposition, and of course I wouldn't, so... that was the extent of what I did, and I believe he was actually served with a subpoena at a TV recording studio.
Yeah, I think when he was doing a CBS News Sunday, as I recall, Face the Nation. Jennifer Brunner, thank you very much for spending your time here tonight and for your service for Ohio. I suspect we may be talking again in the future, but thank you for everything, Jennifer.
Well, thanks for what you do too, Brad.
You bet. Have a great night.
You too.
All take right.
Care.
Net neutrality and fairness doctrine, all of that straight ahead. Brad in for Malloy. Welcome back, Truth Seekers, to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman in with the cold. Neither sleet nor rain nor dark of night will keep us guest hosts from our appointed rounds. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. Yes, I am your friendly citizen, investigative journalist, blogger, troublemaker, muckraker. Joining you for a couple more hours tonight and for the rest of the week. So I'm glad to have you here with me tonight. And over in the chat room at bradblog.com, all of the Malloy folks have showed up. But they say, don't worry, they're bringing cookies. So stop by and say hello there. You can also tweet us at the Brad Blog. Anything else? We will be taking your calls a little bit later this hour, 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. As I said, pardon my cold, but I got one. But here nonetheless, and couldn't be happier about it. We're going to be joined momentarily with Tim Carr from the freepress.net to talk about... net neutrality, fairness doctrine, telecommunications act, all the stuff that frankly is killing this country and what the hell it is that we can do about it. But I want to, for those people who were listening to my interview in the previous hour with Ohio Secretary of State Jennifer Brunner, outgoing, I have to keep saying outgoing, because I am scared to death about what's going to happen in 2012 with Republican governor, Republican Secretary of State taking over Ohio once again. I am concerned that 2012 will look like 2004 in that state. But please take note, she did point out that every voter in Ohio may vote on a paper ballot if they wish. Please, please, people of Ohio, keep that in mind. Who knows where I'll be in 2012. Spread the word. You want to vote on paper? You can do it in Ohio due to the consent decree that she signed with the League of Women Voters in Ohio after she took office, Jennifer Brunner. Boy. All right, Ohio all over again. Got a few years I can worry about that. I can chill out for a while, right? What could possibly go wrong? All right, we're joined by Timothy Carr, the campaign director from freepress.net. He oversees all of their online campaigns and online outreach efforts, including the SaveTheInternet.com campaign. Concerning net neutrality, and I should throw in a disclaimer here. I played in one of the SaveTheInternet.com videos, I actually played the voice of then AT&T CEO Ed Whitaker. So yeah, I've sort of worked with them in one way or another. Tim Carr is also works on their public broadcasting, propaganda, and journalism efforts. I guess not propaganda efforts, but to combat the propaganda. And before joining Free Press, Tim served as executive director of MediaChannel.org, and he also critiques, analyzes, and reports on media and media policy for the Huffington Post and on his personal blog, Media Citizen. Tim Carr, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir.
Hi, Brad. I hope you're feeling better soon.
I'm working on it. Thank you, brother. I appreciate it. All right. Well, there's actually a couple of reasons I brought you here. One that you probably want to talk about, and the other one that I really, really want to talk about. So let's, like I did with the Secretary of State previously, I'll give you the easy one first. Net neutrality. Where are we on net neutrality, the fight to keep the internets free for all? Where are we now as we're looking ahead to this Republican House of Representatives coming in January?
Well, you know, I wish it were as easy as it could be, but unfortunately, it hasn't turned out quite that way. We in 2008 brought into office in the White House a net neutrality champion who himself appointed as chairman of the FCC a fellow by the name of Julius Genachowski, who was at least at the time professed to be a champion of net neutrality. So we thought we were going to make pretty quick work of this and get the FCC to put in place a fundamental protection that allowed all of us, whenever we go online, to basically control our digital destiny, to be able to go where we want, to choose the websites and services and applications that we want without our internet service provider telling us that they would rather we go somewhere else. And so we you know, I mean, I'd be lying to you if I didn't say there were a couple of high fives about a year ago amongst us who have been fighting for this for so long, thinking that it was a done deal. But here we are a year later with a chairman at the FCC who has done nothing but delay on this issue. And he's been very timid in the face of a very powerful phone and cable lobby, which has been visiting the FCC offices and telling them that under no uncertain terms can he put in place the sort of net neutrality protections that have been a part of the internet basically since its beginning. They want to fundamentally overhaul the internet's open architecture so they can start to take control of our choices. So we are at a point
Let me get that straight. Who came in and told the chair of the FCC that he cannot put in policies to keep the internet neutral?
There's a corporation by the name of AT&T. Uh-huh. You may have heard of it. There's another corporation by the name of Comcast.
Uh-huh.
These are some of the most powerful communication companies in the world, more powerful than the networks and the broadcasters. They command.
Are they more powerful than the chair of the FCC? What business do they have? And I know I ain't blaming you here, but I'm saying, what business do they have coming in telling Julius Genachowski what he can and can't do as the chair of the FCC? And who is allowing him to roll over for these guys? Is this him, or is this Barack Obama, who says, yeah?
Well, that is indeed the $64,000 question, whether he is taking, you know, his instructions from the White House, or whether these are decisions that he's made on his own. So these companies are extraordinarily powerful. It's financial clout that's been translated into political clout. They have spent a lot of money on candidates and lobbyists on both sides of the aisle, and whenever they want a member of Congress to write a letter to the chairman of the FCC, they can, you know, they'll have dozens of them lined up outside his door to tell him that he can't put in place these sort of FCC protections. And unfortunately, he hasn't proven himself to be very forthright on this issue, and he's been delaying this decision, the decision at the FCC. He has a majority of votes there. The FCC is, they make decisions by a 5-commission panel.
Mm-hmm.
There are 3 Democrats right now and 2 Republicans there. The 3 Democrats, I'm including him amongst them, have a majority vote, and they can put in place the sort of net neutrality protections that we've been fighting for. But every time they make a motion in that direction, you'll see the full fury of the phone and cable lobby come down on them. So they have just today announced that on December 21st, which is their last meeting of this year, they're going to schedule a vote on this issue. We were pretty sure that's going to happen on December 21st. So this is probably our last chance before this next Congress takes over to get these rules in place. The issue with the FCC is that they are very responsive to Congress, and when Congress, at least the House, changes hands in January, you'll see an FCC that is even less willing to do the sorts of things that we've wanted them to do to protect openness on the internet.
Yeah, and this is absolutely maddening. So what we're looking at, you know, without getting too deep into the weeds here, Tim Carr of FreePress.net, what we're looking at December 21st, will this be a vote to reclassify the internet as a communications system, and thereby, as a communications system, the FCC can oversee it and declare that you must do certain things, keep all websites available to all users at the same speed, and so on and so forth? Is that the basic nut of what we're talking about here?
That's what they need to do. The FCC lost a court case that was brought by Comcast and basically stripped them of the authority. This is the Federal Communications Commission, which as a result of this court case now doesn't have the authority to protect consumers when it comes to the most important communications medium of our time, the internet. The internet is, you know, it's as more people gain access to broadband internet, they're doing all things media are gravitating this direction. A lot of people no longer read newspapers. They read them via the internet. They watch television. They listen to radio. All of the media of the 20th century is merging into this 21st century media. And what's so revolutionary about it, obviously, is that we kind of control what we can do via this high-speed connection. And the agency that is in place to protect our free speech rights, our freedom to choose online, is the Federal Communications Commission. Now, unless they reassert their authority in this vote, we hope it happens, they reclassify their authority, they will be incapable of doing that. It's sort of like the EPA being incapable of setting, you know, emission protection standards on the coal industry. There's a series of decisions have been made both in Congress and in the courts that have basically stripped the FCC of its authority to protect consumer rights.
Well, they also do have a way of taking it back if they stand up and do it. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy, speaking with Timothy Carr of FreePress.net. We're going to take a quick break. Believe it or not, that was the easy question, Tim. We're going to move ahead to even, the tougher fights. These things never stop. Stick with us. Brad in for Malloy. Much more straight ahead.
Here is my request. You don't have to play it, but I hope you'll do your best. I've been listening to your show on the radio, and you seem like a friend to me.
Right. Oh, those were the days. Remember, you could just call the pilot of the airway, call your local DJs. Back when there were local DJs, back when people actually did radio, when there wasn't a clear channel everywhere, but actually a human being who would answer the phone and play your songs. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy, Brad of bradblog.com. We are speaking with Timothy Carr about just these very topics. Tim of freepress.net, the campaign director over there, overseeing all of the freepress.net campaigns and online outreach efforts, fighting for net neutrality in an environment that, Tim tells me, ain't getting any better. It's getting worse there at the FCC. So before I move on to Tim, what I said was, I think, the even tougher topic. What is it that people, listeners, Americans can do to ensure, to try to help in this fight to keep the internet neutral for everybody, meaning, and for people who don't understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, Tim, but basically this is about making sure that AT&T, Comcast, whatever, these big corporations can't come along and say, well, this website has much greater access. You can get to it faster. If you're a user, you have to pay to get to these access, that sort of thing. Essentially, I'm not explaining it well. Maybe you can.
Sure. I mean, this is essentially the free speech issue of our time. People think about the First Amendment. Traditionally, it was a protection that was really extended to the traditional media. And if you look back, you know, that was newspapers and radios and television broadcasters, basically companies that could afford to get their message out to tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people. The internet has changed all that. It's given each of us the potential to reach an audience of millions. I mean, we may be only putting up a video on YouTube of a squirrel water skiing or something like that, but you have the potential to reach 10 million people with anything you do on the internet, and that has made the First Amendment an issue that resonates with everyone. And what we're trying to do right now is make sure that we have the same free speech protections that are extended to the traditional media. And the way that we have to do that is to protect ourselves against these powerful phone and cable companies who increasingly see the high-speed internet connection that they sell into our homes as their new cable system, where they can select the content that you get to see, and they can charge you premium packages for the things that they want to give you, and force you to use certain websites and services that they choose and not you. And so we're at this real fundamental pivotal moment in the history of media where we're going to either continue to have this great experiment of diversity of voices via this new media. I mean, the internet really has only been publicly available for the last 15 to 20 years, or we're going to see very powerful forces exert their control and shut down this flourishing of voices.
Well, but that's right. But, you know, the good news is we've got a Democrat who in the White House who said he cares about net neutrality. We've got Julius Genachowski, the chair of the FCC, who said he's cared about net neutrality. We got Henry Waxman in the House who said he cares about net neutrality, but he went in on this deal with Google and Comcast, essentially, to say, well, okay, well, we'll keep the traditional landline internet neutral, but the new services, 3G, 4G, etc., those don't have to be, and Waxman even bought into that, didn't he?
Well, we have a problem in Washington in that there's a certain myopia where even the people we think to be our greatest champions there are overwhelmed by the sort of consensus, the conventional wisdom of Washington. The good news is that now more than 2 million people have called or written their members of Congress and the FCC in defense of net neutrality. So we're hoping that our voices will be heard instead of the voices of the phone and cable lobby. I mean, we are, Free Press is a very small organization. We have 1 to 2 lobbyists on the Hill at any given time, stacked up against more than 500 lobbyists.
Yeah, we need a tea party here, Tim. Sure. Let me, can you hang on through the break?
Sure.
Okay, because I didn't get to the tough questions that I really wanted to. Can you give me well, I'll get it when we come back. I want to find out what people can do to help, where they can write, how
sure.
they can raise hell and make noise, and then what I really want to talk about, the fairness doctrine. Much more straight ahead. Brad in for Mike Malloy with Tim Carr, Free Press. Stay with us.
You're going to love this. Just love it.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
Yes, I do.
I got the feeling there's something right.
It certainly isn't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off.
Not scared at all. Yes, I am stuck in the middle with you. No place I would rather be. Brad Friedman, even with a cold, Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in for Mike Malloy this week. And we are speaking with Timothy Carr of FreePress.net for just a few more minutes here. Oh, man, this is irking me. I'll tell you what. We were talking before the break about the fact that, you know, we had a Democrat in office who had a promise in the White House, who had been a big supporter of net neutrality. He brings in Julius Genachowski to chair the FCC, big supporter of net neutrality. And, well, it's all gone downhill from there. And now apparently they're all taking orders from AT&T and Comcast. Who'd have thunk it? Who could have seen that coming? So in the fight for net neutrality, which still continues now, as we head towards December 21st, the last meeting of the FCC this during this Congress, and things are only going to get worse next Congress, Tim Carr, what can listeners do to help this equation, to apply some tea party-type pressure on the FCC to do the right goddamn thing here and protect our internet for all the people? What can they do?
Well, we have a coalition of about 800 groups that have a website called SaveTheInternet.com. It's at that URL, SaveTheInternet.com, and there are some action tools there that allow people to write or call the FCC. We also have tools there that allow you to write Congress. If you want to learn more about it, we even have some tools there that allow you to set up an in-district meeting when you're a member of Congress is back home over the holidays. They welcome constituents, and if you and a bunch of friends care enough about this issue, you can call them up and say, hey, we want to come in and we want to talk to you about this. And we even have some fact sheets there that will help you do that, help you, you know, talk about the issue and tell them that they need to get behind net neutrality and make sure that the FCC does as well.
Can I suggest that talking to them in a nice, friendly meeting doesn't do anything anymore? That, you know, if you want to get anyone's attention, you know, I'm sorry, Tim, but it seems to me to you know, you got to wear a funny hat, have a big sign, and raise holy hell at their next town hall meeting.
Yeah, unfortunately, the media pays a lot more attention to those funny guys in their tricolor hats than they do people having in-district meetings with their members of Congress.
So let's put on a tricorder hat. I'm serious. I mean, you know, what the hell? I mean, what the hell can people do? And that's why, you know, I'm obviously irate about this net neutrality thing. And to me, net neutrality, frankly, was always the low-hanging fruit, meaning we've already got net neutrality. What we're fighting now is to, you know, to keep it, essentially.
That's the funny thing about this is that in the debate over net neutrality, the folks like us who've been advocating for it, basically let's keep the open architecture the way it is, we have been painted as Marxist radical communist, whereas those people, the corporate sector and their many AstroTurf allies who've been fighting net neutrality are the ones who actually want to radically overhaul the system.
Well, that's right. And this is why excuse me. And this is why I wanted to bring you in, somebody from freepress.net, because you now have all of these teabaggers out there who are under the impression that, you know, yes, the net neutrality is, you know, like you said, some evil Marxist plot, when it is, in fact, to fight to save what we have, to save, to make sure that even the radical right-wingers out there, you know, that they have the same sort of access on the internet as everyone else. But the reason that these folks on the right believe this crap is because they hear it on where? Not on the internet, Tim Carr. They hear it on the radio. They hear it on our public airwaves. They hear guys like Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, all of these guys lying to them by the millions each and every day to and from work. And Democrats, as little as you can get them to do about net neutrality, as little as you can get them to fight for something that we already have, Democrats seem to have given up the fight entirely to restore the public's airwaves to the people. And I would argue, Tim, that that is where all of these problems come from. And the millions of people who listen to the Rush Limbaughs and the Sean Hannitys, you know, and the liars on and on, who are using our public airwaves, you know, good luck finding Mike Malloy or Randy or Tom Hartman. You know, good luck. If you found us, if you're listening tonight, we're delighted you're here. Spread the word. But even if you spread the word, you know, unless you're willing to pay for satellite, are willing to go on the internet as long as it's neutral to listen, you know, good luck finding progressive voices. We've got right wingers out there lying to us on our airwaves, and this is the fight that, to me, Democrats, Barack Obama, who promised when he came into office on his website, you know, to look at diversifying the media again and getting the corporate ownership out of the public airwaves to some extent. This is the fight they've backed off on, and here's where I want to hold your feet to the fire, Tim. So has freepress.net and the other advocates. They have backed off the push for whether it's restoring some version of the Fairness Doctrine or restructuring the Telecommunications Act that allowed the corporations to buy up all of our public airwaves. The advocacy groups have backed off as well. How can we change
that?
Not,
I mean, in fairness, we have not backed off this issue one inch. Free Press was forged in the media consolidation fight. We are strong believers that in order to create a more accountable, diverse, and democratic media system, you have to break up some of the ownership structures
right.
that have been put in place over the last 20 years, basically since the 1996 Telecommunications Act, that allowed for companies like Clear Channel to consolidate control over 1,200 radio stations and air the type of personalities that you're talking about,
right.
sort of partisan personalities that have favored conservative talk show hosts like Rush Limbaugh.
Well, they're liars, Tim. They're not conservative. They're just right-wing liars,
yeah.
and they're using our own airwaves to lie to all of our people.
Absolutely. The problem
okay.
that we have, the issue that you're talking about, is the Fairness Doctrine itself, which is Fairness Doctrine was a rule put in place in the 1940s that said that all broadcasters, in exchange for use of our public airwaves,
mm-hmm.
had to cover controversial issues in American society, and they had to provide a diversity of opinion.
And serve in the public interest or have their licenses removed.
Exactly. It makes perfect sense. And in the Reagan era, 1987, it was removed. We had the 1996 Telecommunications Act, which kicked out the stops to the sort of consolidation
yep.
of the industry that we've seen, and that gave rise to the Michael Savages and the Rush Limbaughs and the Sean Hannitys of the radio world.
Mm-hmm.
The problem, as we see it, is more of a practical one. Our lawyers are fairly confident that the return of the Fairness Doctrine would not withstand a First Amendment challenge. So the work that we're doing right now is to try to find other ways that we can break up ownership structure to limit the amount of radio stations that a single company can control in a certain area, to make sure that there are protections in place that allow for more diversity of ownership. Like, right now, if you look at minority ownership of radio stations, minorities make up about 33% of our population. It's growing in size, and yet they own only about 5% of our radio and television broadcast licenses.
I can't believe that the fairness doctrine has been in place since something like 1928. Up until Reagan dissolved it in 1988 or 87. I can't believe that it would not withstand the First Amendment a challenge, but okay, let him go to the court. Let him challenge it. You know, this is... this was the problem with the Democrats, for example, on the health care fight. They said, oh, we'll never be able to get single payer, so we'll go in and sort of kind of ask for the public option. And then they end up compromising on something that isn't, doesn't even have the public option. You know, had they gone in and said, we will stand for nothing less than single payer, then you would have settled on public option. How about if Democrats and you and me and progressives and, you know, people who give a damn, Tea Partiers, who should give a damn about freedom of the airwaves, go in there, demand the return of the fairness doctrine in some form, demand, breaking up the corporate structure that was allowed by the Telecommunications Act to buy up all the airwaves. Demand that, and oh, maybe the compromise will be we'll get net neutrality. I mean, we seem to back off. We are negotiating with ourselves here, it seems to me, in a certain way, Tim.
Well, this is a hard issue for me because I've looked at this in a number of different ways, and I, speaking on behalf of Free Press and myself, we are not in support of the reinstitution of the fairness doctrine because we don't think it will work to get us where we want to go. Net neutrality is something we're fighting for, as well as diversification of the types of ownership of the airwaves, and there are other means to get to that kind of diversity that we desire, to break up these radio broadcast blocks that push Rush Limbaugh out to more than 20 million listeners.
Well, what are they?
Every day of the week.
How do we? I know we can go for net neutrality. We can go to savetheinternet.com, and there's action steps. What action steps can we take? To tell them, okay, it's time to break up. We need the trust busters or whatever we have to do to break up this corporate control of our people's airwaves.
Every 5 years, the FCC does an ownership review, and that time is up right now. They're looking at ownership of the airwaves right now, and we have put in a number of fairly significant complaints through research showing that there's a lack of diversity in ownership, and that the FCC needs to do things like break up local monopolies, where in some cases you have a single company like News Corp that owns more than one newspaper and more than one television station in a local community, to break up those things and to set ownership caps on the number of stations that one company can own, and also create allowances on the airwaves for a diversity of ownership, so that you'll see, rather than, you know, 5 to 6 companies owning most of the radio and broadcast television stations in the country, you'll see hundreds and hundreds of them. And through the actual structure of the system, you'll get the kind of diversity of opinions that...
Okay, where can I go? And sorry to break you off, Tim.
StopBigMedia.com.
StopBigMedia.com?
Is a site that Free Press runs with a coalition of other groups.
Okay.
There's a lot of information that addresses just exactly those issues.
StopBigMedia.com. Tim Carr, thanks for letting me put some fire under your feet of a sort. I don't mean to do that. I do mean to do that. And, you know, I'd love to come out to one of the Free Press conferences and see if I can stir up some I don't know. I just feel like this is the big enchilada. This is what's killing us, and the fact that the people no longer own the people's airwaves, and in fact they are being lied to over those airwaves. And we're spending a lot of time fighting the necessary fight for net neutrality, but it really is, I hate to say it, low-hanging fruit when the big enchilada is taking back our airwaves.
Well, that's exactly the right issue. And it's good that you mentioned a conference, because our next conference, our national conference for media reform, is in Boston in April,
yep.
And we'll be talking about just these issues. But if you talk about the airwaves, we should talk about taking back our airwaves for wireless internet, because that is the future of communications for a lot of people. We need to make sure that these handheld devices, by which more and more people are communicating in multiple ways, are on open platforms, and that we don't see the kind of consolidation of the wireless internet space that we're seeing in broadcast media.
All right, deal. We will fight for the future of communications, and we will fight together for the right now, current, every damn day, driving back and forth to work of communications. We need to do them all, Tim. I really appreciate your sticking in here with me tonight. I know it's late out there. Tim Carr from freepress.net. You can also check out his blog at mediacitizen.blogspot.com, and also go to savetheinternet.com and stopbigmedia.com. Did I cover them all, Tim?
That's perfect, Brad. Thank you.
Thank you, brother. I really do appreciate it, and I hope we'll check in the days and months and years ahead, because this ain't getting any better. It's only getting worse. Thank you, brother.
Happy to do it. Feel well.
All right. Thank you, sir. All right. Oh, man. All right. We're going to finally take some of your calls, as I promised. And I got the whole next hour free to talk to you about any damn thing you want to talk about. 877-520-1150. 877-520-1150. Good news coming up, but not for you. Sorry. Brad, in for Malloy. Stay with us. All right, welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com in for Mike Malloy, taking your calls at 877-520-1150. Got a few more, a few more things I want to rant about, including the fact that corporate profits were the highest on record last quarter. What? They were? Yeah. And talk about that in the next hour, along with your calls. But we got to the phone lines lighting up here, and I want to try to hit some of them here before we have to get to a break. Janet from Minneapolis, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show.
Hi, Brad. Thanks. I'm the station owner of the Minneapolis Progressive Talk Station, and I wanted to
KTNF, the great.
That's right.
Yeah.
KTNF, and I wanted to echo what Tim Carr said. I think the answer is not the fairness doctrine, because the Republicans will just put on a pushover talker instead of someone like Mike Malloy or you, and call that the fairness doctrine. What our problem here is we have stations that own, that businesses that own five, six, three
yeah.
stations, and there aren't enough stations to buy. The radio airwaves are limited. So if there were a fourth Clear Channel to sell some of their stations,
mm-hmm.
or CBS, then potentially there would be an opportunity for people to buy them, and we could get more on all around the country. I mean, the slaughter in Ohio was partially due to the fact there was no progressive talk.
Yep. Not partially, Janet. I would say, I mean, that the slaughter across the country was due to the fact that there's no progressive talk.
And I'm really, really disturbed that it seems like there's no groundswell of support for, you know, against the Comcast-NBC merger. But, you know, we set that aside. It'll probably go through. But I think there was a really good story that progressives should look at today in the Wall Street Journal,
mm-hmm.
in which Dick Armey was being interviewed. And he said, when he had his freshman orientation with the Tea Partiers and the New Republicans, he said, forget about being on a committee. You want to get something done? When you want to get something done, you go out and you get people to call in and inundate Congress with phone calls, and they will get so chicken. He gave an example of it done that successfully. We do that in Progressive Talk a lot in Minneapolis, and it really works. And we will do what we call call to action, and we will give our listeners a name to call, a number to call, and we'll say call them. And we have turned around so many unfair decisions because of that. So Progressive Talk is a tremendous role to play, but it's a, but we have Democrats have the need to get together and raise money, plan to lose money. Every business loses money for the first 3 years until they get the job done. But Democrats all turn to me and they go, oh, how much money can I make if I do this? And I'm like, are you kidding? News Corp doesn't ask themselves that question.
Not only does News Corp not ask themselves that question, they don't care. They lose money hand over fist when they take over, you know, whether it's a newspaper outlet or a radio outlet. Janet, are you able to stick around? I know it's late out there. Are you able to stick around until after the break? For a few minutes?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Well, we'll pick this up after the break. That's Janet, the station owner at Minneapolis's great KTNF, and thank God there's still Progressive Radio in Minneapolis. We're going to take much more of your calls straight ahead, but Janet, I got a couple of questions for you that I want to ask you after this break. By the way, for folks up in San Francisco listening on Green 960, I think you're going to hear Desi and I doing the green news at the top of the hour. You're listening to Brad in for Malloy. Stay with us. Program Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com, your friendly citizen investigative journalist, blogger, troublemaker, muckraker, drafted back into guest host duty. Yes, Mike has got me out from behind my computer and onto the microphones across these fruited plains, coast to coast and around the globe, and I'm delighted to be here this week while Mike enjoys a few days off for Thanksgiving. I'll be with you tomorrow night. We'll be speaking with Andy Worthington from England about, I'm sorry, another failure of Obama's, the Gitmo failure, and so much more straight ahead. Also, David Swanson later this week on War is a Lie and an extraordinary election lawsuit that's now been filed in Florida. We're going to talk about that tomorrow. And then there's that Alaska Senate race, blah, blah, blah. Too much to talk about, but I'm going to be here doing it for the next three nights as long as my cold holds out. Our phone number is 877-520-1150, whatever you want to talk about. Before the break, I got a call from who I consider my boss, Janet, at AM 950 KTNF in Minneapolis. Because we were talking about the Fairness Doctrine, the Telecommunications Act, and all the trouble that's brought upon us, Janet, of course, is the station owner of KTNF. And, Janet, before we appreciate you sticking around for another minute or two just to chat here, because you had made a comment that I wanted to respond to, which was you said that, you know, you were surprised that Comcast, that this whole Comcast-NBC merger was not enraging people the way you would might think it would. I would suggest it's not enraging them because they don't know about it, because nobody talks about it, because the people don't own the airwaves. The corporations do, who are in favor of this kind of merger.
Yeah. You know, Brad, you're absolutely right about that. Absolutely.
I mean, this is the problem. It goes around and around and around, and when we talk about reforming the airwaves, reforming the corporate system, well, you know, you're an independent station owner. You're a rare breed, but the corporate radio stations and TV stations and cable news stations, they don't even want to talk about this, do they?
No, they don't. And you've hit the issue right on the head. And that reminds me, today there was in the New York Times an article called Effort for Liberal Balance to GOP Groups Begins. And I thought, God, with promise, they're going to fight back on the media, because they said they're going to fight back on the airwaves. And David Brock has raised $4 million. But unfortunately, as I read further into it, it just was another one of those 501c4s that was going to buy airtime on television stations and radio stations, you know, to be a counterbalance to the messages that were put out that were partially for the other part of the defeat of Democrats in Ohio and Pennsylvania all over
the undisclosed money. They're going to do the same undisclosed money. Yeah.
And the problem with that is, okay, you know where all the money goes? It doesn't go to progressive talk stations. It goes to the Clear Channel, to Republican-owned stations, to try to convince those people to not listen to the lies. And then the minute the ad ends, then Rush Limbaugh and Glenn Beck spend 3 hours straight saying basically that the ad they just heard was a lie. So my concern is Democrats keep thinking the wrong way about this. What we need to do, I believe, after my experiences, we need to go in every single community. People need to sit down the Democratic part, the Democratic independents, and say, who are the moneyed people in this community? Get the moneyed people together, convince them to invest in purchasing their own radio station that will be their station in their community, and maybe lease a station if they eventually can prove it's financially viable after a number of years. Then they can buy the station, and we will have 24/7 messaging, and we can put on people like Mike Moy. To be honest, I can't sell advertising during Mike's show. Most advertisers won't touch him with a 10-foot pole. But because I can sell advertising during the day...
Why? Why?
Too hot. Too hot.
Too hot?
Yes.
Okay.
Listen, you know what happens to my advertisers? They constantly get emails and phone calls from people that aren't really their clients, Republicans, who will send them emails and say, did you hear what Mike Malloy said? You know, using the swear words a lot and all that. He says, and the names he calls Republicans. And they'll say, why would you advertise at that station? And so what we say to them is, don't worry, we won't put you on the Mike Malloy show. We'll put you in Stephanie and Ed and Tom. But I can put Mike on to tell the unfettered truth at night, and the truth gets out.
Yeah, you know what? But where are all the people calling up the stations and saying, you're not putting on Rush Limbaugh, are you? You're not advertising on Rush Limbaugh. He just, this guy, he's a liar and a racist and a, what, yeah?
Yeah, I know. What I don't care if they, I don't really want them to do that. What I want them to do is, like, everybody's listening on the internet who doesn't live in Minnesota, support our advertisers. I'm like, well, how can I do that? You can support them online. I got an online advertiser right now on a Mighty Station. Support my advertisers, and if my advertisers hear one crackpot, call them up and say, I'm not going to support your business. And then 20 people walk in the door and buy something from my station, he's going to say, I don't care about that crackpot.
We need to fight.
It all comes down to money. Are you economically supporting Mike Loy? Are you economically? And you know how we're supporting Mike now. Sponsoring an hour of his show. It's beautiful. It works wonderfully.
Yep. No, I hear you. And we got to, but we have to, we can't cede any more ground. We've got to fight fire with fire. And if you have to call an advertiser, if they're willing to call advertisers and say, hey, you're not on his show, are you? We're going to put the word. You know, then we ought to do that to everybody else. I'm sorry. I just think we have to push back, Janet.
I could be wrong, Brad. You could be right. But let me tell you the problem I see with that is, then the advertisers will all say, I'm just not going to touch political talk. It's too hot. And then they just go to music radio. And I need people. So I don't, the more we do it, the more they do it. And I just kind of want to avoid that so that I can bring on, I have Republicans who are advertisers, not many. Mostly what I have are Democrats and independents. But the independents get scared if it gets too hot. I know I don't really have Republicans, independents. So it's the independents I'm a little nervous. There isn't Democratic business owners that are afraid to advertise on our station because they're like, oh, I don't want to lose my Republican clients.
You know, this is Jim, it's so crazy. I mean, if you're a car dealer, I don't care what kind of a hard right Republican you are, it seems to me that you're interested. You don't give a damn the political affiliation of somebody who comes in. You want to sell them a car. What do you care if they're a Democrat or a Republican or anything else? I just don't understand that thinking. It's, you know, not of you, but of these advertisers who even think this way.
Well, ironically, most car dealers in my state are Republicans.
Well, fine. And they want, I don't care, they want to sell cars to Democrats, too, it would seem to me. It would seem like they would want to advertise on your station. The only reason they wouldn't is if people were threatening them in the bargain. And yep. The only reason they're doing that is because they want to shut down other voices, and they don't give a damn about democracy and free speech and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, Janet.
Well, thanks for your time, Brad. I appreciate it.
No, thank you, and thanks for you for what you're doing up there. I love Minneapolis. I really do. Hope to get back up there. I'm from St. Louis, Missouri, originally. So,
me
well,
too.
Really? What,
yeah.
What high school?
Visitation.
Oh, okay, I'm Ledoux. See, that's what we all do in St. Louis. All right, Janet.
Well, you didn't have to say high school. You should have said school, and I would have had the right answer.
There you go. Oh, man. Okay, well, great to know. Oh, we're doing a radio show. I guess we should go. Thanks, thanks, Janet. Great talking to you, and God love you for being one of those independent radio owners fighting the good fight. Please let me know anytime I can help you in any way, shape, or form, okay?
Thanks, Brad.
Thank you, Janet. All right. Oh, man. I'll tell you, it has never made any sense to me at all. You know, why advertisers would not want to advertise, you know, on a show that's perceived as a democratic, progressive, liberal, whatever it is. You sell to whoever. You make money. Well, I guess the reason has to do with if they do that, they will be threatened. They will be threatened by the right-wingers. They will be threatened by the Republicans who don't give a damn. They claim to give a damn about free speech and competition and all of that stuff, but they don't. That's a lie. 877-520-1150. Let's take a quick call from Derek in Rincon, New Mexico. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, Derek.
Hello.
Hey, Derek. How are you?
The Fairness Doctrine, wasn't that... correct me if I'm not wrong, but back in the 30s, it was originally the Republican Party that pushed for it?
You know, good question. I don't know. It was...
I think the whole issue was that there was a lot of left-wing talk on the radio in those days, and the Communist Party and stuff, and the Republicans couldn't get their say on the air. So they pushed real hard to get it on, and now it's more kind of flip-flopped the other way, and the people that are against it are the ones who originally, well, the party is a different party today than it was back then, naturally, but the Republicans, I would say, are quite different.
Yeah. Well, you know what? It's a good question. I'm not sure who actually developed the Fairness Doctrine, whose idea that was, but you know what? I think it was a good one. I think it kept us in good stead for 60 years, you know, and the notion that it would be challenged under First Amendment constitutional challenge. I don't know. Let's take the challenge. Let's fight it. Let's cross that bridge when we come to it. You know what? I'd be delighted. The right-wingers like to say that, oh, it's about taking right-wing, well, they say conservative, but taking off Republican right-wing voices off the air. No, it's not. It's about fairness and balance. Keep Rush Limbaugh on. He can lie for 3 hours a day, 5 days a week if he wants to on the air. But let Tom Hartman come on and tell the truth for the next 3 hours on every one of those same stations. Derek, I got to run to a break. I appreciate your call,
okay,
sir.
Thank
All right,
you.
Brother. When we come back, much more of your calls. Jeff in Santa Fe, I know you've been holding forever. I promise I will get to you soon enough. I appreciate you hanging in there. Steve in Florida, Paul in New Mexico. Going to get to you all. And... corporate profits. I keep wanting to get to this story, but there's just too much going on here today. Well, that's okay. I'm here the rest of the week. Once again, corporate profits, the highest on record last quarter. Dear American worker, you are no longer needed. You can go straight to hell. The profits are fine. And oh, by the way, please, please, let's have some more of those corporate tax breaks, can we? Brad in for Malloy. Stay with us.
God only knows it's not what we would choose to do.
can lean on me. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. Brad of bradblog.com. Going to try to talk myself down. I've completely forgotten that I had a cold. I've gotten so ticked off over these past... Give us a call, 877-520-1150. Jeff, I'm going to get to you in a second. Thank you for hanging on. But I wanted to get this out. Corporate profits, the highest on record last quarter. This is from the New York Times today. The nation's workers may be struggling, but American companies just had their best quarter ever. Ever. American businesses earned profits at an annual rate of $1.659 trillion in the third quarter, according to a Commerce Department report released Tuesday. That's the highest figure recorded since the government began keeping track of over 60 years ago. What recession? The next highest annual corporate profit levels on record was in the third quarter of 2006. Corporate profits have been doing extremely well for a while. Since their cyclical low in the fourth quarter of 2008, profits have grown for seven consecutive quarters at some of the fastest rates in history. And yet, one out of five Americans now is out of work. Why would that be? This breakneck pace can be partly attributed to strong productivity growth. Productivity growth, by the way, that means they fire people and get somebody else to do both of your jobs. That's productivity growth, by the way. New York Times says it means companies have been able to make more with less. Yes, they have. As well as the fact that some of the profits of American companies come from abroad. Economic conditions in the United States may still be sluggish, but many emerging markets like India and China are expanding rapidly. I wonder why that is. Because they have jobs. They got the ones that these corporations here in the U.S. sent away to India and China. Of course they got jobs. Of course they're spending money. And the corporations here in the U.S. are doing great. Better than ever. But for some reason, they have to be given a tax break? Seriously? Are you kidding me? More corporate tax breaks at the same time that the right-wingers are out there saying, oh, the deficit's a problem, the deficit, we got to do something about the deficit. But, oh, let's give trillions of dollars in tax breaks to corporations who clearly don't need it. Even I'm starting to remind me of Malloy now. You see what happens? You see? But... The highest ever, but you ain't got a job, and the Republicans in Congress are trying to cut off unemployment benefits, cut off Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, the things that the poor people need, and the Democrats are scared to death to do anything about it. So it's good news, just not for you. Corporations are doing great. You, on the other hand, you can go straight to hell. You're not needed anymore in these United States. We've got plenty of customers in India, China. They got money because they got your jobs, suckers. Yeah, and I'm talking to you teabaggers who are fighting in favor of these corporations and the Republicans who are fighting to give them even more of your money and your jobs. All right, Jeff, I promise after this break, coming to you. Brad in from Malloy. Stay with us.
This is your paradise. There ain't no need for ya. There ain't no need.
All of you cowboys all over this land, I'll teach you the law of the ranger's command.
teaching you the law of the ranger's command here, even with the cold. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy, taking your calls at 877-520-1150. Trying to calm myself down or I'll never get to sleep tonight. I will be back with you tomorrow, however, and on Friday. There is a Mike Malloy special on Thursday. All right, it's a rerun. Whatever. But tune in for that. The perfect antidote to your tryptophan afternoon. Malloy will take you right out of that tryptophan coma. All right, let me get to Jeff in Santa Fe. Jeff, you have been holding forever. I thank you for that, sir. And finally, welcome to the Malloy Show.
Wow, Brad, glad to see you getting back to the political red meat there in the last minute.
Well, we weren't in the political red meat prior to that?
Oh, well, you know, the fairness doctrine and all, but I mean the political red meat. You know, hey, most of us Democrats out here, we're pretty sure Obama can't win re-election.
What?
He can't win re-election. Nobody's going to vote for him.
All right, now, hang on a second. Wait, for one thing, I don't know whether he can or he can't, but, Jeff, you ain't most of them Democrats out there. You're just Jeff in Santa Fe, and you think Obama can't win re-election, right?
No, I don't. And I think if somebody's going to challenge him,
yeah,
they need to step forward soon, in January or February. And I'm just wondering, I mean, who do you see doing that? Do you see the bold Democrat doing that?
Well, before I answer that question, Jeff, why do you think that Obama can't win in 2012?
I mean, I'm a lifelong liberal leftist Democrat. Uh-huh. I voted for Obama. Uh-huh. I can't stand what he's done.
Uh-huh. Jeff?
Yeah.
You didn't vote for Obama.
Yes, I did.
You're not a Democrat either, are you?
Yeah, I voted for a Democrat every election. Uh-huh.
Who'd you vote for in the primary?
In the primary?
Yeah.
I voted for Obama.
Did you?
In New Mexico, I voted for Obama.
Mm-hmm.
And I voted for him in the election.
Yeah. Well, you know what, Jeff? You're not a Democrat. You're not a liberal.
Oh, come on.
You're not a leftist. Because here's the deal. If you're going to call up a talk radio show and hold on for 2.5 hours, and I appreciate that you did do that, but if you want to make people believe that you're a Democrat and you want to make people believe that us Democrats out there don't think Barack Obama can win, here's a tip for you, Jeff. Nobody who is actually a Democrat calls themselves a liberal leftist. You see, only right-wingers do that when they're talking about progressives. They call them leftists. Okay, Jeff?
Oh, that's
you got
absolutely
it?
Absolutely ridiculous.
Okay.
I'm a lifelong leftist Democrat. Come on,
there
don't
you
give
go.
Me that.
All right, you go ahead and be your leftist. Anyway, good luck to you out there finding a challenger for Obama in 2012, sir. All right?
You bullshitter.
Woo! All right. Well, see, there you go. I called that guy right. He was not anything like a progressive. And we had to dump him there, by the way, only because he used some language that he shouldn't have used. Not because of his point of view, not because he was, lying to you and me and everybody else. Anyway, okay, yeah, he was full of crap. What do you know? Who would have spotted him? Anyway, let's go to, can I get back to your phones here, Tony? Am I all right to go back to the phones? All right, let me get to Steve in Lakewood, Florida. Welcome to the Mike Malloy. Oh, by the way, 877-520-1150 if you want to get in before the end of the hour. 877-520-1150. Okay, Steve, hey, Lakewood, Florida, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir.
Hi, Lake Worth, and Brad, thanks for dispatching Jeff expeditiously.
Man, did you see
what
that?
A joke. Listen, thanks to Charlie Crist, we have had paper ballots.
Yep.
I used the first one in the primary this past summer.
Right.
And I was encouraged because I made a mistake and I voted for two opposing school board members.
You overvoted.
And the machine, huh?
You overvoted. You voted for too many.
Yeah, I overvoted.
Right.
So the machine. McCain kicked it back. It
right.
wouldn't accept it. Oh, that's that gave me confidence that this thing is working.
Okay.
So then in the November election, of course, I was encouraged again, and I went through it. And but the big question I have that I'm sure I can find an answer somewhere, what happens to those paper ballots?
That's the
because
problem.
If the two things that have been trashed
mm-hmm.
that bug me no end. Number one, exit polls.
Right.
They were so accurate for so many years, and all of a sudden they're
yeah.
dismissed.
Yeah.
They're not accurate anymore.
No, you got it absolutely
and
right.
They would trigger a recount.
Mm-hmm.
If there was a problem. The other one yep. is the League of Women's Voters has been trashed. And debates, I'm 73 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I went through, you know, all kinds of stuff, all kinds of good stuff, and now it's all disappeared. And, you know, with nobody enforcing the antitrust laws, et cetera. And We can't get a straightforward, decent debate.
Well,
established.
You know what? I'm not going to blame that on the League of Women Voters. And sometimes,
I wasn't blaming it on the League of Women Voters.
Yeah.
They were dismissed. They were not allowed
oh.
to establish the debate format.
Oh, that's right. Well, now that's been taken over by the Presidential Debate Commission or something like that.
It's been taken over by CNN and MSNBC and whatever.
Yep. All right, Steve, let me give you one point here before I let you go. Tomorrow night on the show, we're going to be talking about I'm not even sure which hour. So you've got to listen to all 3 hours, but we're going to be talking about Osceola County, Florida. Is Lake Worth anywhere near Osceola County?
I just drew a blank.
Okay.
I know where Lake Okeechobee is.
All right, well, when you ask what happens to those paper ballots... And you said you were happy that they told you when you put it through the op scanner that you overvoted. Well, it works to tell you that you overvoted in this case. That's good to give you a chance to correct
yeah.
it. That's good.
Right.
But when it comes to counting them later, that, as you properly ask, where did it go? Well, we're going to talk
yeah.
about that tomorrow in an extraordinary lawsuit that was filed yesterday in Osceola County with some horrific numbers and some facts and some points that are going to blow you away. So be sure to tune in tomorrow night for that.
Do you think that's how Rick Scott got to be our governor?
Well, I will tell you
God
this. I will tell
us.
You this. Unless ballots, votes are hand-marked by the voters and then counted by the voters in front of the voters so that they can know they've been counted correctly, you and I and, yes, Joe Miller and everyone else in the world are always going to have questions about these elections, and that's
yeah.
a grave threat to democracy, as I pointed out time and time again, and somebody's going to listen one of these times. All right, Steve, I got to run. I appreciate your call, sir.
Last point.
Okay.
When anybody's challenging Sarah Palin,
yeah.
ask her if she's ready to debate.
Okay.
Our president.
All right. Thanks. Thanks, Steve. I appreciate it. Sarah Palin, I've not heard her. Not ringing a bell. Tony, you got any Sarah Palin? Is that ever heard of? Never. 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. And for all you leftist, liberal leftists out there, that guy, Jeff, I'm glad that, it was a toll-free number. Because otherwise he would have been holding on for 2.5. Maybe he was calling us on a cell phone, though. And we used up 2.5 hours of his cell phone minutes so that he could come in and say, us Democrats, we know for a fact that Barack Obama can't win. And we're liberal leftists, so we know. Woo! 877-520-1150. You still have time to get in before the end of the show. If you hurry, 877-520-1150. Anything you want to talk about, let's go to Paul in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, Paul.
Yeah, hi, Brad. Thanks for all your work on elections. And then now you're talking about radio, one of my favorite subjects. And I just, you know, most of the most progressives and left just completely ignore radio because it gives them headaches to listen to it. And but it is the starting point for everything the GOP does.
Yep.
And we wouldn't be in this disaster if the Limbaughs and Hannitys hadn't been allowed to sell us this war, this deregulation, all this stuff. And you know, I've talked to sponsors, I've called sponsors of the Limbaugh, local Limbaugh stuff stations, and a lot of them think of Limbaugh as a entertainer, you know, and they also through their ad agencies they get on the stations, and until you call them, I mean, when you call them, very few of them actually defend Limbaugh and the rest, and they're just waiting basically for callers to call them and complain.
Yeah, well,
and ask them why are they doing this? Why are our universities? Why are students and faculty allowing their universities to put their sports on these stations and give credibility to these guys?
Well, you know, had a very positive effect when there was an organized campaign against Glenn Beck on TV. He's got no advertisers. He's got crap advertisers. He's just junk out, you know. All the real advertisers went away because there was a concerted effort to hit those advertisers to say, look, this guy, you know, it has these racist attacks on Barack Obama, and it had a real effect. It made a difference. And, yeah, when you call up, that's the excuse that they give when it comes to Rush Limbaugh, you can call and complain, oh, he's lying about this and that. Oh, he's just an entertainer.
Yeah,
but guess what? Mike Malloy's an entertainer, but apparently that excuse doesn't hold up. You know, if you heard earlier in the hour, we were talking to Janet from KTNF. That excuse doesn't hold up. You can't say, oh, he's just an entertainer. You know, they make progressives pay a price.
And most of the left's efforts go towards Fox, but you know, and this whole Glenn Beck thing was towards Fox, but not the local radio stations to put back on. I mean, there's so many blue areas put these guys on just because it's a monopoly, and they, you know, they need to feel that those local stations have a huge effect on local politics, on all, you know, judges, everything.
Yeah. It really is. It is everything, and that's why, Paul, I appreciate your call, and thanks for what you're doing out there, and keep raising hell and keep making noise, okay?
Thanks.
Thank you, brother. I run out of words. This is what it's all about, and the fact that Democrats keep ignoring this issue, it is the airwaves. It's the people's airwaves. It's always been about the airwaves. It's the media, stupid. Brad on Malloy, give us a call, 877-520-1150. One more segment. Welcome back to the show. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. Hitting all the wrong buttons, aren't I? That's what I do. Want to thank my producer tonight, Desi Doyen, who was doing double, triple duty producing, screening your calls, and minding the chat room. And thanks to all you chatters in there. By the way, you can still get in, 877-520-1150, if you want to make Des work right up to the end, 877-520-1150. My thanks also to engineer, keep it playing, brother, engineer Tony Sorrentino. Thank you, man. He's going to be here with me all week. I hope he better. And, of course, to the folks here at LA's K-Talk AM 1150 for allowing me to infect Stephanie Miller's microphone. Don't come in tomorrow, Stephanie. If I were you, I would stay home. My thanks also to Ohio Secretary of State Jennifer Bruner for joining us this evening, as well as...
where did I drop? I dropped all my... I lost everything.
All my notes all fell. Tim, this is what you get when you ask a blogger to come in and do the radio. A blogger with a cold. My thanks to Timothy Carr at freepress.net. And, of course, my thanks to the great Mike Malloy and Kathy Malloy for letting me sit in tonight. They will be back with you on Monday. Until then, you got me, like it or not. And, of course, for those listening via MikeMalloy.com, please stay tuned for Head On with Bob Kincaid. All right, we just a couple more minutes here. What do I have time? Okay, new national survey has good news for Republicans Mitt Romney and Mike Huckabee. Both lead Barack Obama in a new poll released by Quinnipiac University on Monday. The poll shows Romney, the former governor of Massachusetts, leading Obama 45% to 44%, and former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee beats Obama 46% to 44%. Now, I wonder why that would be. You know why I think it is? I think it's because he's not reaching out enough to Republicans. Because his far leftist liberal agenda is, man. There's also some good news, however, for the president. Obama leads former Alaska Governor Sarah Palin 48% to 40%. Well, there you go. There's some good news, right? As it turns out, the same poll found that I, Brad Friedman, also lead Sarah Palin 47% to 41%. The survey of likely voters has a margin of error, plus or minus 2%. Republican respondents chose Palin as their favorite for presidential nominee in 2000. This is interesting. The GOP respondents chose Palin as their favorite for presidential nominee in 2012, and yet they still think Obama can beat her, whereas Romney and Huckabee would beat Obama. According to this poll, anyway, if you believe in such things, 19% of Republicans selected Palin as their favorite, 18% selected Romney, 17% selected Huckabee. You know, do you think Obama is going to get it soon, get it too late, or not get it at all? All right, do I have 1 minute to get to Randall? Yeah, one more minute. All right. Randall and Tempe. Hey, Randall, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. How are you, sir?
Brad, we're not worthy. We're not worthy.
I'll be coming out to Phoenix, I hope, in a couple of months. I hope we'll get together and say hello and have Mexican food.
Excellent. And I just got off the phone with Kevin Connor. We're doing a grand tour of Arizona.
Are you on a speakerphone, Randall? Are you doing this again? Are you on a speakerphone? You call into a radio show, and you're on your speaker. All right.
It's a very expensive $50 BlackBerry earpiece, I'll have you know.
Throw it away.
And, anyway, I'm off it. But just tell all these good folks in the next 30 seconds what FINA and Disclose are, and call their Congress member and senator, either whether it's a lame duck or an ambulatory chicken, and tell them to pass those or don't come home for Christmas.
All right. Well, yeah, call them, and then when they do come home for Christmas, show up with hats, with tri-corner hats on and signs, and raise some holy hell, for Christ's sake, out there. Man, what does it take?
Pitchforks and torches.
Pitchforks and torches. Bring them on. Yeah. Thanks, Randall. Appreciate it, brother.
Thanks, Brad.
All right. Thank you, America. We will see you again right here tomorrow night. Same Brad time, same Brad station, sitting in for Malloy. Please be here with us. We got a big show ahead for you. Let's see. Good night, America. Keep it lit. We'll see you on the bradblog.com. Until then.